The Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network is brought to you by Onyx Hunt. Bringing you the best GPS mapping software directly to your smartphone or desktop, Onyx offers you the ability to see property boundaries, mark waypoints, track your location, and so much more. Visit onyxmaps.com or you can download it directly from your app store today. Save 20% off of your purchase by using the code NATION20 at checkout. That's capital N, nation, followed by the number 20.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
All right, guys, welcome back. Adam here.
Matt is here.
And we are excited to get back. You know, this is podcast number two for the week. Could be number one, depending on how you're listening
to it. Yeah, depending on how you listen.
We've been a long time without Matt and I just sitting down recording a podcast.
We've been a little muffled.
We've had guests on. You guys wonder why we don't have many guests on. It's because there's a whole lot of stuff
we want to say.
We go in the field every single week, multiple times a week, to clients' properties across the country, and it's like every time we go, there's a topic.
Yeah, it's like, we could do this.
It's
funny because we have a list of 30 different podcast ideas that we never get to.
Because
I saw this.
We always have one, yes.
I saw this.
Yeah. It's for rainy day podcast, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, for us, we see these things going on, and we see these different, we make these observations when we're on clients' properties, and it's like, okay, this is what this guy's doing, and we'll check in with each other. Okay, you're in Ohio, I'm in wherever. You're in Kansas, I'm in Oklahoma. What did your place look like?
Yep.
Oh, it was this. There's the ever-growing theme that this is the invasive species he was dealing with. This is the invasive species he was dealing with.
And you go in because of the number of properties and just geographically where we've been, where I grew up, where you grew up, is different. But you go in knowing and expecting to see it. So, you're already on guard when you go to Ohio and you're like, I'm going to see this. Where it's not a question necessarily of, am I going to find it? It's, where is it at?
How bad is the... How bad is it?
Yeah. How much time... Am I going to break his heart or am I just going to crush it?
Is he going to get to actually implement some really good work in the next year or two? Or is he going to have to spend the next year or two
getting
rid of this junk?
Yeah. Getting to the point in which he can begin to manage native species. And that, honestly, it's tough news to deliver. And I know people have way more important jobs than us that deliver bad news every day. I get that.
Yeah, first world problems. Yeah. We had to tell him what plants was growing on his farm.
Yeah. But it's I still hate to do it because I know that really everyone wants to be going and crop tree releasing whatever or implementing some diverse native grasses and forbs on the property. It was like, we can't do that until we fix this problem. Then you're going to be a couple years out. So you're delaying the native. You got 3 years to wait for a stand of natives. Like, dude, you're probably 5 years out from that. Because it's going to take 2 years for us to get it to that point where we can even start. Yeah. I'm sorry. But that's if you don't do it, then you're never going to have that. Like, you're going to sit here and spin your wheels. But it is what it is. And so for that conversations that we have and what we see is we have to talk about invasive species and we have to address them. We can't just let it continue on that there's a no management thing as an option. And we're not saying this in we're saying this as fact, as in science and science based.
Yeah.
And from a landscape, just a land ethic thing too.
Mm-hmm.
This is not in response to anything. This is just, we have to have good quality information to help guide, again, the wise use of natural resources and land if we want to yield the best results for that said land.
Yes.
If we own land, it's our responsibility to manage it and make it as healthy as it can be. That's yes. That's like the duty. I don't think people realize that. Like when you sign over a deed or you're like closing on a contract.
Besides needing to make payments.
Yeah, besides.
You need to make sure you're doing the right thing.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, you have to. And by putting, let's say, invasive species control or management on a back burner or not even have it on your plate at all, that's not cool. Like that's not an answer. That's not a solution. That's the problem. Like that's why we're here. That's why we're dealing with it at the capacity, at the rate, at the prevalence that we are right now is because it's been like, oh, it's okay. It's a naturalized plant now. It's not.
Yeah.
It's never going to
be. And we should address that invasive species isn't a species that has aggressive tendencies.
Invasive non-native.
Invasive non-natives. Because there are some non-natives that are used in applications like food plots or cattle farming that aren't typically, they're not categorized as invasive.
Right.
Because they're adapted to, or people have adapted them to part of the landscape.
Well, they just don't grow like
aggressively,
and they're not take over things.
They're not going to throw a seed over in the woodlot, and 20 years later, that entire understory of the woodlot is filled with said plant.
Correct.
And so that's where there is a difference. We're talking about non-native invasive species. Most of these are going to be a recognized invasive species by the government, by NRCS or USDA, and there's going to be a list for your region most likely that says these are the ones that are most
prevalent.
Typical here, and they should be removed as soon as possible.
And there are states, correct me if I'm wrong, there are states who are fining folks
Kansas.
For, who are they're fining them for not managing the invasive species on their property.
Yeah, and I have mixed reviews on that as far as, you know, like...
Not to get political or anything.
Not to be political, but the government can get their hands out of my stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you have a neighbor, just any listener right now, if you're finding yourself... I want you to clear the mechanism, clear your mind and find yourself going, okay, regardless of what's going on, if my neighbor's doing something that affects me, I wouldn't like that.
In a negative way.
In a negative way.
Or if, affects the health of your landscape that you're managing.
I've got a kids camp, or I've got this outdoor retreat, and neighbor upstream's dumping pollution.
Oil.
Oil into the stream. That affects
that
me.
That poison.
Listen to the other podcast this week to hear that word used. That affects me. And from a natural resource standpoint, if I'm trying to manage for wildlife and my neighbor decides, you know what, he's going to start growing Brad for pear seedlings, there's a good chance he's going to affect me.
Yes.
And that's where invasive species come into play for me is, yes, there are some places, and yes, the government introduced a lot of them.
To fill a void,
but at least they're smart enough now to realize that, whoops, we messed up.
Yep.
And a lot of times they'll do cost share to get them removed.
Yes. Yes.
I don't think it's at any place where we should sit back and say, you know what? It ain't that bad.
I'm thinking of like the Monty Python scene where it's like, it's only a flesh wound. It's like, bro, your old field is overrun with invasive non-native species. Bradford pear, autumn olive, bush honeysuckle, Japanese honeysuckle, Cerisa lespediza. The list goes on and on and on. But we see that time and time and time again. And it's like, it's not a flesh wound anymore.
Yeah.
It's something that like, it's even more critical at this time frame that we have to be able to do something and get ahead of it. Because, I kind of go back to the other podcast we talked about. Stop what you're doing and think about this. If you don't do anything for 5 years, what is it going to be?
Yeah.
You tell me what is it going to be? Because I can guarantee you that
it
if
ain't
you going
to be a big buck place.
If you have an invasive, non-native plant or multiple growing in a given area and you're not doing anything and it's like an old field successional place that's not just complete closed canopy, it's probably going in a direction of more heavily dominated invasive species.
Yep. Well, for example, let's go back to that Kansas deal just real quick so we can close that chapter, close that little scenario. So in the state of Kansas, if you have a neighbor who is infested with Cerisa lespidiza and he planted it for goats, who cares how it got there, but there's Cerisa there and it's not on your farm. But over time, you start noticing your boundary being affected with more Cerisa lespidiza and you're controlling it. You're fighting a battle that is going to always be there because you can't get to the root of the problem.
Yeah.
You can call up, turn him in. They come give him a warning, tell him that there's a problem and he needs to be controlling it. And if he doesn't do that, they could put a lien on his property. So if he decides or fine him.
Right.
And if he doesn't pay the fine, then he could get the lien on his property. That's how it works. Now, it sounds like, wow, government's really getting in over there or getting their hands.
Overstepping the boundary, right?
But at the same time, that's how much I hate invasive species, and it kind of makes me go, well, good for Kansas. There's one way of making some money.
It's not only that, but it's like that's like the severity of it, though, too, because I don't think that we can sit back and realize or truly anticipate 30 years from now. What if this doesn't happen? And we talk all the time about habitat manipulation and conservation, and the people who are listening to this podcast right now, so that's you right now, most likely a private landowner or someone who wants to or is aspiring to be a private landowner, you have the responsibility and the largest land holding capacity in the United States to make the biggest difference, whether it is timber management, whether it is bringing or improving bobwhite quail numbers, rough grouse, it does not matter.
Helping the monarch butterflies.
Yeah. You have the same responsibility and the same impact potential to stop or slow down or manage the invasive species issues. Like, it is an issue. It is a problem. It is a route that we're going
down. It's one of the biggest not talked about problems out there.
Yeah.
There's a few people who are talking about it a lot.
You remember
when... And they're probably not hunters.
I don't know if
they're nature enthusiasts.
We're kind of getting outside of the habitat bounds with this, but I remember this, so it's kind of applicable. We're trying to make it as applicable as possible. When I was growing up, like, the divorce rate was like much lower.
Yeah.
And like, when someone would get in a divorce, it was like, holy crap.
Did you hear about that?
Yeah. Like, that was, that's something big. Like, they got a divorce.
Yeah.
Now it's like, oh, everybody's getting a divorce.
Yeah.
And it's like, kind of the same thing with invasives.
It's
like
50% or something like that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it's like, same thing with invasives. No one's really talking about it that much right now as if it's an issue, but give it 20 years. I think that if we don't do anything now,
they're going to talk about it when it's too late.
Exactly.
They're going to be like, well, I guess we really should have addressed autumn olive. I wish we should have jumped on bush honeysuckle.
Yep.
And so, for example, let's use some analogies. Let's use some real world what we witness.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what you don't know. I said it on the other podcast. So now you're gonna know. Okay, we're telling you what we're seeing when we're traveling the country. We've been in 28, 29 states just in 3 years, going on our fourth year of consulting. Even before that, we were traveling the country. And we're from different parts of the country. So, and we are plant, tree
nerd,
flora, and fauna nerds. So when we drive down the road, a lot of times we're looking at what's growing in the ditches, and I can assure you most of the time it's not natives.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. And you wonder why a lot of our native species are struggling. We've got native songbirds, native pollinators, native game species, native non-game species, and a lot of the numbers are declining. And you can say, what, this, that, predators, all that comes down to the fact that we're forcing a lot of animals to try to make a living off of species that they didn't adapt to and evolve with over time, because these invasive species don't have natural-born predators to keep them in a manageable state.
So what you're saying is, in that analogy, let's say the plant that we're talking about came from Asia.
The plant came from Asia,
but the pest that in its natural community did not make that same trip, that same voyage.
Yeah.
And so it does not have the natural predators to limit it and keep it at a managed state. And whereas here, it may not be an invasive species to the same degree in Asia because there are natural predators that are keeping it at bay, or there are, things consume it there. But here in our landscape, where it is a foreign body, it is something out of place, there's nothing here that is limiting it from continuing to spread naturally.
Yeah.
That's where, when there's a foreign body, something wrong, we need to step in and actually do something because the pests aren't here.
Yeah, for example, like common milkweed.
Yeah.
There's little insects that... little aphids and other insects that will attack common milkweed, and they'll
consume the leaves
and make it to a stress level where it doesn't produce seeds, and or it eats the actual seed pod to where the seed never becomes viable, so it controls that from reproducing and making the next generation, keeps them in check.
Yep.
Some years the milkweed wins, some years the aphid win, or the other insects win, and there's not as many milkweed seeds. Okay, keeps it manageable. In Asia, they're dealing with some of our native species, and they're invasive species over there because the aphids aren't there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're constantly making seeds every single year, just pouring them out there.
Winning.
And it's just
winning.
Like there's no natural predator to keep them in check.
Yeah. And I'll go to say this. The answer isn't necessarily, let's just go get the predators from there and bring them here. No, the issue is the transplanting of said species in ecosystems and landscapes where they're not supposed to be.
Yeah.
So that's where the responsibility then falls on our shoulders.
Yeah. Fellas, ladies, I don't know what you believe, but this is how we believe. And this is the way, and that's the way it is, as Paul Harvey says.
Yeah. And that's the way it is.
Our Creator, God Almighty, put these plants and things in place in a very intricate design, and because of a curse things fell apart.
Well, and he did it right from the beginning.
Go read the Bible and hear how magical it was pre-curse, pre the fall. Now he designed it in a very chaotic and amazing way. And in my opinion, if we take something that was not placed here from the start, we're saying, you know what? You did good, but you know what? You could have done better. You missed out on this plant. You should have put it here. And then that plant, without any natural predator, goes, this is a pretty good place. I can make some hay here. And before you know it,
I can be a top seed producer.
If you look at any ecology or any kind of studying of ecology to maximize a landscape, you're going to see diversity and a long list of different things that provide benefits to a long list of other species. The problem with the non-natives invasives is the fact that they can turn into a monoculture a lot quicker than what our native landscape can do, and can fight that off. So you'll see an old field, a diverse prairie. Let's go with a diverse prairie that's got thousands of species. And you're going to see, you know, you could go out there with a, don't do this. And if you do, drink some of that poison. Go out with a bag of Cerisa lespediza seed and throw it in that. And you can watch, as time clicks away, that diverse landscape turn to more of a monoculture of Cerisa lespediza. It's horrible. It's awful. It's causing a decline of species.
So let's just real quick break that down. Let's say you have a pasture, and it's a warm season native pasture, and you have cattle grazing it. Cattle are your pest, if you will, quote unquote, that is managing the native grass. So it is consuming.
Where are you going with this, Matt?
It is consuming the native grass that is
keeping
limiting
it in check.
Not eliminating, but just keeping it in check, and so it may not be producing seed head.
Dr. Mike Chamberlain referring to a turkey poult as a predator. It's not a predator to a lot of us, a lot of hunters. We don't look at that as a predator. But at the same time, that insect that is getting consumed by those turkey poults
looks at it
just like a a lot of people would look at a gray wolf or a coyote and say, he's a predator, kill him.
Yeah,
he's absolutely trying to kill me.
It's based on perspective. So yeah, to the grass, cattle is
a predator. Yeah.
But
yeah,
cattle aren't foraging on sarisa.
Or a lot of insects are also.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And it could even be a microbe in the soil that it's affected right in the roots.
So at that point, now we've got the grasses and the forbs that are getting outcompeted because their natural predator is consuming them, following its natural progression, but it's being overtaken by something that's not natural,
yeah,
that does not have the pests.
And a cow's looking at so that, therefore, looking at that Sarisa lespidisa going, I'm not eating that stuff. I don't know what that is.
Hey,
and so it makes a lot of seed that Sarisa does. That seed scatters out. Every time that cow nips on the native grass and suppresses it for a little while, that Sarisa's like,
or gets caught in the cow's hair, and he walks down the pasture spreading the seed.
Yeah,
there's awful. So many different ways that it gets spread and be prolific on the landscape. But that's the example of we have these species that are here now without the natural predators from their given region. So we have to be that predator. That falls on our shoulders. And again, if we don't do it, I know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I know you've
worked. What's the first job that God ever gave man? Caretaker.
Yeah. Working the
he
garden.
He called us to be caretaker of the land.
It's our responsibility to do it. It's our responsibility to keep in check. The animals don't have the ability to say, oh, I'm going to manage this. Like, I don't like it. It's not supposed to be here. That falls on
knock
on
over
our
on that other guy's door. I understand you're a deer who knows how to get things. I need some herbicide over here. I got a lot of autumn olive I need to take care
hey,
of.
Hey, bro, help me out.
Yeah. I've been known to locate certain things from time to time.
He's a courier. Yeah. He's the guy in jail you don't ever want to talk with. Don't look him in the eyes.
So, you know, we did the prairie and we did the old field. Now, you can look at woodlots, okay? Mm-hmm. You can look at oak, big, majestic oak hickory forests that were here from the creation of time. And it's just like, this was amazing. We have these humongous oaks with scattered hickories and there's some softwood trees in there. There's a lot of diversity. And then a suburb pops up or whatever, and somebody plants some bush honeysuckle because it's got a lot of berries and the birds love the berries.
Or they thin the timber and they logged it, and the forester just came off a job site from a suburban unit, and he brought in some bush honeysuckle.
Yeah.
An autumn olive seed.
And he had Japanese stiltgrass on the tracks.
Began to sprinkle it.
And so what
property.
You'll see, or what we are seeing, is you got to look at it from different layers, and we're going horizontal layers. You've got the top of the canopy, and this is oak hickory. This is your native species that have been here, and they're producing the next generation with nuts and with acorns. And so they're trying to, once they die off, they're trying to ensure that there's future generations of their species. And then you go to mid-story and you have the next generation of trees of oaks and hickories and elms and all these other native species. And it all sounds great in theory, and it's wonderful, and that's the way it is. And then down at the forest floor, you have little seedlings of the next generation of oaks and hickories and different things. But then it gets disrupted, or even if no harvest, you mentioned harvest second go, no harvest.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to have harvest.
It takes some sort of sunlight. Like oaks, a lot of oaks are going to need sunlight to continue to grow and be productive and fill that void. So it may require a lightning strike to kill that big tree to where it opens it up for the next generation to grow.
Stone damage.
It needs some stone damage. And it ends up... to where it opens up the canopy, and then in the second generation, the understory tree grows up at the same time that seedling turns into the understory tree. And you get this cycle of death and life, and death and life. But then these non-natives come in, no natural predator, can grow in much better shade conditions than the oaks can or hickories can. And all of a sudden, our understory is bush honeysuckle or autumn olive. Or autumn olive and bush honeysuckle and Japanese stiltgrass.
Yep.
And we have two layers, two generations above that. We've got our oaks and our hickories, both the crop trees and then our understory trees. But guess what? something causes storm damage and lightning strikes or whatever, an insect, a blight or something kills those trees. Now our oak hickory forest is a bush honeysuckle thicket,
yeah,
or a down south a Chinese privet thicket, or an autumn olive thicket. And our forest, which was very diverse, has turned into a monoculture of a species that most of our animals and other species don't even know how to work with it.
And not trying to paint like a gloom and doom picture, but just being really realistic.
You better get on it now.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in a lot of, I grew up on the East Coast, spent a lot of time and a few years of my life managing invasive species across kind of the Eastern Seaboard. A lot of different military bases, things like that. But I remember distinctly going to several, for various reasons, let's say, but several properties. And the future of those properties are never going to look necessarily the same. One, deer density was way too high, and they were consuming all of the vegetation that was native and that had any ounce of palatability or nutrition, and therefore, in an area that has a lot of traffic and a lot of people and a lot of invasives, there was invasives everywhere. And so the complete understory of these forests and these landscapes were completely overtaken by invasives. You name it, they were there. We saw them, we treated them, sprayed them. And this just isn't happening in forests. This is happening in fields,
wetlands,
this is happening
fragmites.
In wetlands. This is happening upland sites all over the place. So if you care about ducks, if you care about turkeys, if you care about quail, if you care about deer, I don't care what it is. If you just care about the landscape, the health of the ecosystem, our planet, especially the United States, you gotta care and you gotta do something about stinking invasives. The future isn't looking bright if the mentality or the mindset is,
yeah, it ain't that bad.
It ain't that bad, or I'm not going to do anything, or it's too late. The too late, that just is irritating.
Well, here's the other thing. Yeah, it's too late. They're already here. Suck
Wrong.
It up. Yeah,
Wrong.
The other thing is, too, of, well, it's doing something natives couldn't. That one really gets me, too, because it's name what species you're talking about, and I will find a native species that does it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But what you're asking a native species to do, like the shrub, autumn olive, well, it can grow in the understory. Name a native that grows in the understory. Well, shrubs don't necessarily flowering dogwood, but or a young oak is doing the same thing, but it's providing benefits to more species. Like, stop caring about the one species, the one game species that we're managing for. It's like a cattle farmer's. Cattle farmer is not necessarily a cattle farmer. He's a grass farmer. But he's not necessarily a grass farmer. He's a soil farmer. Yep. He needs the healthiest soil to grow the most grass so he can hold the most cows. If a deer hunter is, I care about the most deer, he's trying to focus on the most vegetation possible. That's a diversity, so it's year-round food. Which
food and cover.
And then look back down at the soil and say, how can I create a healthier soil so I can grow
more
plants.
Better nutritious plants.
Yeah. And it's like I told somebody the other day, if you told me you were focused on growing deer in his landscape, we jumped to covey quail, I'd say, okay. Mm-hmm. If you said, hey, I want the most deer possible, I'd say, all right, we're managing for quail. I said, and you'd look at me like, no, that's not what I said. And I said, yeah, I heard what you said, but we're managing for quail because we're going to get your goals much quicker and more long-term effects by managing for a species that requires better habitat. Because the deer are so adaptive. It's like, if I was managing for quail, I'm going to manage for bees and insects and as many insects as possible. And you don't get that by going, they're not that bad.
You know,
the native species, you know what? They're probably here for, I don't know, it's too big of a fight. I don't want to tackle it.
Or the other component is, my native species, I can't get them to grow because I have too many deer. Well, then the issue is not only you have an invasive problem, is you have too many deer problem.
Yeah.
You can solve that. Yeah. Don't tell me that you can't solve that. That's primo issue number one.
Hope for EHD.
We all like to kill deer. Go have fun. Yeah. Go enjoy the sport. Go manage the deer population. So then you can have some actual natural regeneration. And we talked about it pre-show. So you've got this field of autumn olives, and you're like, well, I don't know what to do with it. Oh, I can't get anything else to grow. Cut them down. Plant your shrubs in and around the canopy of these autumn olives that you cut and treated.
Make them a good thing.
Yeah. Now you have a natural utilization cage.
Yes.
Maybe you have 50 of them out there. Now you have a great place to get started on natural shrub plant communities that are dotted out among this old field. The deer aren't going to be able to get into the canopy of that dogwood to consume them when they're super young. You've got a great start.
Yeah.
Don't tell me there's not a solution.
And you think
is.
You think autumn olive grows fast in a field? You know what else grows fast in a field?
American plum. I have a perfect picture of that. I was just in Kansas, and the gentleman had gone through mechanically just to experiment and mow through some of the gray dogwood colonies and see how fast they regenerate. And he's got some. He took them down to the ground with an eco mulcher, just right through some of these things. And they are up basically hip high in a year and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, tell me they don't grow fast. Now, I get it. They had a root system there. But I also went to another farm right up there and was there last year, a year ago. And cattle had just recently been pulled off, basically. And it was grass dominated. Not as nearly as many shrub components to that landscape. But within 1 year of not having cattle on that property, or a year or two, basically 1 year of successional growth, the amount of shrubs just from that 1 year difference, very visual, definitely was heading in the right direction, just allowing succession to take place. You can't, and there's high deer density there. I promise you, it's 100 deer square mile or 80 to 100. It's very high, and you're still having that regeneration.
Yeah.
But they're managing appropriately, and that's the important thing.
Yeah. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to the land. You owe it to your neighbor.
Your children.
You owe it most to your future generations.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's like, here, kids. Here's this farm that I let the invasives take over.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Have fun doing all the work that I didn't do.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
You know, I should have cut those 20 trees, but now you got 200 to cut. Here's the keys.
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what you're handing over. What kind of gift is that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like,
well,
we
killed some good deer on it.
We can't.
Yeah, now I got to figure out what to do with the mounts. It's raw.
Yeah, right.
What you leave? They're left with trying to figure out what to do with these mounts.
It's
what?
It's
probably
sad.
Throw them in the pile of cut autumn olive to burn them all together.
It's incredibly sad, but it's one of those things that, again, I really want to stress this. This is just something that has got to be shared. We talk about controlling and managing invasives. It's not a response to anything, but it's just one of those things of we've got to present facts. We have to present observations that are going to yield results that we know people are looking for.
Yeah.
And if we don't discuss this, then we're just missing a huge window and an opportunity to be able to educate on what the future may look like if we don't begin to actively manage this stuff.
Well,
and that's a scary,
if
that's
you
a scary
don't,
thought.
If we just throw out invasive species and we're like, we're not going to address that, whatever. It's not important. Let's go in and cut some bedding thickets. Cut the bedding thickets.
Oh,
well,
it's just
going to
grow
five
up in
years,
autumn olive.
It's autumn olive.
It
starts, and who knows how long until it turns in. Because you let that canopy open up, and you think bush honeysuckle or autumn olive grows great in the shade, wait till you see it grow in the sun.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, that's great. Let's do some edge feathering. Well, it's all going to grow up. Like, you do the edge feathering perfectly. You lay every tree just exactly the way it needs to fall.
Precise.
Well, guess what? Now you have an edge that's Chinese privet.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's go and
or smooth brome.
Let's turn this crop field into a beautiful, diverse prairie. But I'm not going to worry about that Cerisa lespides over there in the ditch.
Wrong.
10 years, now we have this beautiful stand of diverse Cerisa lespides.
Diverse Cerisa?
Yeah, that's right. I said that. Because it's in different growth structures. But it's Cerisa lespides.
Still ugly as sin.
Yeah. And so that's what happens when you don't address it. You can do the best work in the world, but it's going to fill back in with the worst stuff in the world for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And truthfully, if I had the solution to maybe, let's say, limit the amount of herbicide that was needed to be able to control it, I'd be for it, sure. But truthfully, I'm not going to go in and I'm not going to attack invasives without herbicide, because I'm going to treat them. I'm going to do it very effectively, and I'm going to get rid of it and nip it in the bud.
I'm already too old to fight this fight for the rest. I don't want to fight it till the rest of
I'm going to kill it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to just cut it, because cutting does not kill it. Mowing does not kill it. Prescribed fire does not kill it.
Yeah. It with that philosophy, it's only going to stunt it enough to we hope the natives can outcompete it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm keeping it at bay and limiting its spread, but I'm not killing it.
Yeah.
Herbicide is killing it.
Ugh. It's tiring. It's tiring to think about invasive species, because it's like we could just do
it's a job.
We could do a whole podcast, like launch another podcast, Land and Legacy podcast, and our partner podcast, Invasives Must Die.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely an issue. It's definitely something that's going to be addressed, and it won't be the last time we talk about it, because some of the follow up podcasts that we're going to have revolving around invasives is
how to kill them.
Yeah, we're going to address the regions. We're going to give the top four whatever invasives that we see there, and you're going to learn and you're going to know exactly
probably
how.
More than four. We'll probably
yeah. But we're going to learn and know exactly how to address them.
Yes, because we have to. Doesn't matter what state you're in, you have invasive species that being once removed are going to make a more healthy landscape, a more diverse landscape, a more productive landscape, not only for you, but the game species and non-game species that live there.
And let's just real quick, think about it. Think about if you're not doing it for the game species, if you're doing it as a farmer, or you're doing it as, like, there's invasive species in pastures. Like there's numerous, we got multiple rows, we got beefsteak, we've got Cerisa lespides. All these things impact the productiveness of pastures and cattle ground. Like that cuts into your
income.
Like we got to address it. So anyhow, hope you guys enjoy it. Share it with someone. If you
please share it. This is a message. It's not cool. It's not sexy, but it has to be said.
Yeah. Share it with someone who's got some invasive problems.
Yes. So share it with everyone you know, because we all have them for the most part. So, and if we don't have them, we'll get them soon.
And appreciate you guys listening, but wanted to throw out too, the virtual property evaluations. Those are still active. We've got a lot of people who have been utilizing them. They're fantastic ways to be able to spend some time with us on virtual meetings and talk about your property. So if you have questions about that or interested in it, be sure to go to the consultation tab at landlegacy.tv and reach out through that. We will catch you next week.